And so we continue with Psalm 119. As I was thinking about what we can say over the psalm that for months, since the beginning of the year, we've been looking at in small sections, I wondered, where can I begin? And when I was thinking about my thoughts, I have to confess, I wasn't actually expecting that our daughter would be with us this evening as I was putting together an anecdote. So I give you full permission at the end of the service to go and ask her if what I'm about to say is true or was true for her upbringing, because she and her brother David will happily tell you how tough their upbringing was. Of course, looking back in hindsight, it's always a wonderful thing, isn't it? We can look back and think, well, maybe we would have done it slightly differently. But as you walk through those parenting years, you just kind of do it without a guidebook, but maybe by instinct. Maybe you follow the examples of your parents, or you rebel against the examples of your parents, and you kind of muddle your way through. But I know, because I've heard them on this subject, that they will tell you that life was really tough for them. Because when they wanted something, and they asked the first parent, and the first parent said no, there was no way on earth that the second parent was going to say anything other than no. And she's laughing, and she's nodding away, because that is so true. Do you know, it was really easy in some instances when one of our children decided they'd like a ferret. There was no way on earth we were going to agree to a ferret. So those kinds of decisions were very simple to agree on. There was no way we were going to agree to a dog or a cat or whatever other animal they may have suggested. And thank goodness, after watching programs or television or reading books, like, for example, Dumbo, they never thankfully asked for a small elephant to come part of our family, but they would have known that the answer would have been no. However, sometimes they would have asked us something, one parent at a time. They tried both, but it didn't make any, both tried together, but no. They may have asked us something, actually, we may not have always necessarily agreed with the other on. But as far as the children are concerned, the answer would be the same. That was how they had to live. There was no place of appeal. That is a phrase that they have used. There was no place of appeal in our family. That was a phrase that they would use. That was the way that they had to cope growing up. And of course, in today's society, that is so different, isn't it? Let's be honest, if we fall out with our, say, our energy company, and we don't like what they're telling us, they tell us that we can appeal to the ombudsman. Doesn't usually make any difference, but we can appeal to the ombudsman. Or if we look at our televisions and we see how someone has been given a prison sentence and they don't like it, or whatever a decision has been made by the courts, they have a right to appeal. Or maybe another example could be we take to social media. Well, they wouldn't if it was me. But other people take to social media, or we contact organisations or television programmes such as Watchdog or Rip Off Britain to make sure that we realise and we can voice how frustrated we can get. Our poor children had no place of appeal. We were united on whatever it might have been. And then if we look at this particular section of Psalm 119 and we see the delight that the writer finds as it looks at the decrees and the statutes and the laws, I am sure if you ask our daughter, she never panted to hear what we may say on a particular subject if one had already said no, because she knew the outcome was the same. I wonder, I haven't asked her this, did they ever delight in an answer we may have given them? I don't know. But the joy of being a grandparent now is, of course, we can watch, in this case, David, with his child making those decisions that, for us as his parents, we made all those years ago. And I really hope and pray that as Lucy grows and any other subsequent grandchildren, if they come along, grow, that we will still be around to find out their views on how tough their childhood may therefore be. Because, of course, what do? We do try and set boundaries, don't we? We try and give a child, as we were hearing this morning from Ian, that trying to make sure that we live and have an environment which creates the best for people. We want people to flourish and to grow. And that, in a sense, is what we're being reminded of here in Psalm 119. The title that I was given for this evening was a chain reaction. That sense of sometimes what happens next is as a result of our actions or as a result of our words. I think I've said before that in our previous churches, we coined that phrase as choices bring consequences. And sometimes we will make a choice and we'll make a decision, and whether that's a good choice or a good decision or a bad choice or a bad decision, there is always a consequence. There is always something that happens next, a chain reaction. Have you ever said or done something that you knew the moment you'd said or done it was a mistake? I could have great delight at this precise moment in time to tell you of an incident that happened in our house only a few days ago, where just by the press of a button, something happened. But since my husband was so nice to me this morning in the service, in front of so many people, I thought I'd let him off this evening. But you can ask him afterwards. And we're going to watch a video now of something that happens at the touch of a button. Thank you.
So, did they do it?
Now, as soon as that row goes, that could be the record.
Over 50,000 dominoes in the spiral, but that was only the start of it. They had actually stacked 277,000 dominoes and took the audience on a journey, literally. As the constant clacking filled the air, they could see notable landmarks and people. And just when you thought the excitement was fading, they added in a bit of tension. In the interest of a fair and balanced report, it didn't all go to plan. One of the pyramids didn't collapse. The second streamer on the wall didn't go off. The race cars didn't start. But who cares? It was still a pretty amazing attempt, considering it took the team over a week to set up.
The push of a button. And look what amazing thing happened. I don't know if any of you have ever tried to position a domino exactly so that the impact of the one falling on it will then have the impact of the next one and the next one and so on and so forth. You've got to get that positioning exactly right. And of course, as we saw there, that didn't work completely in every one part of that example. But they broke a world record in the process. And okay, there was a hiccup. But wasn't that absolutely amazing? It was the best example I could come up with for a chain reaction, the moment where something happens and then there are consequences. And so back to our passage. The chain reaction of what happens if we delight in God's words. The first three verses, "Your statutes are wonderful, therefore I obey them. The unfolding of your words gives light. It gives understanding to the simple. I open my mouth and pant, longing for your commands." And so we see the wonder of what happens when we read God's words and we follow what it says. But as we read, as we heard Peter read to us, there are also examples within just these few verses of what happens when that chain reaction, when we don't follow what God is saying, goes wrong. When we fall prey to the lure of society or to temptation. When tears are shed because things don't go according to plan. Maybe we do something that we knew really at the start we shouldn't be doing. Maybe we spend money on something we shouldn't be spending money on. That short-term pain ends up with a long-term addiction. Something we may do that means that we've gone away from what God is wanting us to do. We no longer are obeying God's words, but we are disobeying God's words. Jan challenged us only a couple of weeks ago, how often do we turn on our televisions or pick up something else or look at our Facebook or whatever it may be, rather than turning to God, rather than picking up his words and reading what it says. The song that we sang, as the deer pants for the water, so my soul longs after you, I wonder, how true is that for us? Not just today or this week, but how true is that as we look back over our lives or in the days to come? Even after we've heard this message again and again and again, as we've looked at Psalm 119 over all these weeks, are we still squeezing God out of our lives? Are we still choosing to only pick up his words if we've got a spare 5 minutes, and then only if we have a spare 5 minutes? Because we know, not just from this section, but from the sections that we've heard over the last few weeks, that if we look at God's words, if we accept that they are wonderful, if we unfold them and read them and just absorb them into ourselves, we realize how much better off we will be. Your statutes are wonderful, therefore I obey them. I stand before you as someone who fails miserably, and yet I know in my head that that is what we should be doing. I don't know what kind of person you are. I know what kind of person I am, but I don't know what kind of people you are. Some people are people who want to please others. Some of us are people who don't want to bring hurt or upset to others. We don't like being in the wrong. Perhaps that's because of our upbringing, or we're afraid of what punishment may befall us. And so we do what we can to make sure that we please others, please God. But we also know, and we only need to look at those that we know, or again on our televisions or wherever we may catch up with what goes on in the world, that there are people who automatically seem to rebel against everything that would be ordered and lawful and right. We live in a world where we see people kicking back at society, hitting out at others, and the focus has gone from being others to me, what I want to do, how I want to respond. But that's not what we are called to be or to do. Yes, we may want to be liked. Yes, we may want to be popular. Yes, we may want to fit in. But the psalmist here is reminding us that as people of God, our primary focus should be only about pleasing him. Because of all that he has done for us, because of his love and the way that he has cared for us, our response should naturally be to look to him. The psalmist in this section is talking and standing in awe of what God has said. He's standing in awe at the words of God, at its harmony, its practicality, its power. The God who wrote and gave us our Bible deserves our obedience. And when we are obedient, then transformation does take place. And we see that when it talks in the unfolding of your word gives light, it gives understanding. We see that transformation taking place, and in the sense of giving light, we see that means that we are going away from the darkness of the world into a spirit-filled, light world where God is our focus. Do we delight in God's words? How thirsty are we to read his words, to sit in his presence, to quiet our minds, to recognize it's only by grace that we have this relationship with God? The chain reaction of reading and following and obeying means that our lives will be changed and transformed, and we will end up following God. And when we don't, it's not just us that's a poorer, but it's God too. And it was God who sent his son to that cross for each one of us. But as we see in verses 1:3-2 to 1:3-4, there are times when things indeed go wrong. Turn to me and have mercy on me, as you always do to those who love your name. Direct my footsteps according to your word, and let no sin rule over me. Redeem me from human oppression, that I may obey your precepts. If we were obeying what God was doing, if we were obeying his commands and his laws and his statutes, we wouldn't need that part of the psalm in our Bibles. But we clearly need it because we have to call on God for mercy. We have to call on God for protection when we have fallen prey to sin. We end up crying out to God to save us from our human oppressors, from those who want to squash us down, from those who want to take us away, from those who want to make us the people to fit in with them, rather than the people that God is wanting us to be. We need to turn to God when what we are doing is contrary to what we know as Christians we should be living and doing and being. The chain reaction, when it goes wrong, is a place so often of darkness and of loneliness and of despair. I was chatting to a family some time ago, and I was chatting to them in order to do a funeral for the person that had died. And they were telling me as I was chatting to them about how this particular person, he had been offered an amazing job. And it meant that they would have been able to live a life that was much more comfortable, where there was more security, where there was less of that hand-to-mouth existence, but where, by accepting this job, things looked like they were going to get a little bit better. Sometimes you can't measure hope and stability, can you? And for this particular family, they'd had a long discussion. Should he leave where he was and go to this new opportunity? Or should he stay? And after a long conversation, the family agreed that he should take up this new opportunity. And on the first day, he started, and there was excitement and expectation, and they were beginning to think about how life for them would end up being better. And on that first day in that new job, it became very, very clear that they would be asked to deal somewhat underhandedly with their colleagues, with other companies, with the government and the tax office. And this person and this family had left behind what was, in a sense, secure, although difficult, and moved to this new hope, this new job, this new expectation. And the person was left with that terrible dilemma. What do I do? And the family were telling me how it was a really hard decision for them. Should they stay in that job just for a little while until they can find something else? But for the family, for the man concerned, they had to be true to themselves and what they believed. And so on that first day, they never went back. And yes, the family faced difficulty, but he couldn't live with himself or with what he believed, because for him and for the family, it was far more important to live true than to live and deal with others in a way that went against everything that they believed in. We use that word oppression, don't we? It comes in so many different forms, so many different shapes and sizes. And it is hard to stand firm, to hold on to what we believe, to follow the laws and the commands that we find in our Bible. But Jesus bought us at a cost, and the cost was his life on the cross. We're not living in a world. Some people across our world live in fear of persecution as Christians. It's not true for us the majority of time. And sometimes we are called to live and to make difficult decisions. But what we are told here in this psalm is it's far more important to follow God and to do his will. And to know that when we do come before him and we say we're sorry for the way we've behaved, or to forgive us for the things that we've said, we can do that knowing that we have been forgiven. And once again, we can live in God's love. And so this last couple of verses reminds us of how wonderful it is to live in God's love. If you look in Numbers 6, verses 24 to 26, occasionally we use these words as a closing blessing. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face towards you and give you his peace. In verses 1 through 5, it says, make your face shine on your servant and teach me your decrees. I love reading that part in the Old Testament where Moses' face is shining so brightly that people can't look at him. The people of God can't look at him because he's radiating God's wonder and God's light and God's glory. And so, of course, Moses has to walk around with a veil over his face. And I get a sense of that. Make your face shine on your servant and teach me your decrees. Wouldn't it be marvelous if actually we shone so much with God's glory in a world that is so dark and so broken and so lost? In the book of Esther, we know that it was after a period of prayer and fasting that she went to the king. She went to the king knowing she may face death. And yet he turned his face towards her and extended his scepter. And she knew that she'd won his favor. She'd been faithful to her God. And she'd received favor in return. In Nehemiah, we know right at the beginning of Nehemiah, he went before his king and his face was sad. And the king said to him, why is your face so sad? And again, Nehemiah knew that the king may punish him. But he prayed. And King Artaxerxes granted Nehemiah permission to go to Jerusalem, to see what was going on, to follow his God. Make your face shine on your servant. That whole sense of God hiding his face from his people is because he hides his face because he is disciplining them. None of us want to be at the receiving end of God's discipline and wrath. We are again reminded throughout the scriptures of God who is slow to anger, merciful in his love. And yet, we are also reminded of our God who will be the God who will punish, who at the end time will be our judge. And we need to continue to walk in the light, to walk and follow his commands, to have a teachable spirit and a willing heart in order to live in God's love. But that verse reminds us, streams of tears flow from my eyes, for your law is not obeyed. There will be people who will face that judgment and won't receive a light and God's love because they haven't lived according to God's ways. And sometimes the reason is because we've not told them about what God wants and how he wants to love them, what he's done to show them his love. We have a part to play to help others avoid that judgment that will come from failing to obey God's commands. It's all very well praying for our world. It's all very well allowing tears to fall for our world. We are called to do something. We are called to make a difference. We are called to be that light in the darkness. We are called to share his love with others. I wonder, are we willing to read his words and obey them? To come to him when we've failed and to accept his forgiveness, but also to share and to tell others so that they do not fall and face God's anger, but because of their message and the message that we are willing to take for God to use in their lives and through us, for them too to know what it's like to live in God's light and God's love and to have God shining his light of love upon them as he does upon us.